53 and more rain on the
quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is absolutely fascinating, the difference in definitions when it comes to playing hardball. Now, for the Democrats, what is playing hardball is refusing to fund Department of Homeland Security. Now, do you know what that does? It has a bad effect on TSA at the airport, which I don't think is what the Democrats are looking for. Do you know what it doesn't do? It doesn't defund ICE, because ICE was funded lavishly and well into the future by the one big beautiful bill, and that passed all the way last summer. So, does it affect ICE? It does not. So what have the Democrats said? We're not going to fund DHS, Department of Homeland Security. So even as we're having terrorist attacks in America, remember the bar that was shot up, three people dead in Texas, by the guy wearing the shirt that said property of Allah? And the shirt he had under that hoodie was the flag of Iran. Yeah, terrorist attacks, and then a bomb thrower at the mansion of the New York City mayor, Zohran Mamdani, who is a Muslim. Well, apparently a couple of Muslims decided to toss IEDs. Thank God they did not go off, because when the police talked to these two jokers, who are now facing federal charges, do you know what they told the New York cops? They said, we wanted this to have more deaths than the Boston Marathon bomber. That one killed three people. Many, many people were wounded. They wanted to be more deadly than that. And who are they throwing the bombs at? They were throwing them at pro-America protesters who said, we don't want New York City to be taken over by Muslims. Well, okay, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that. And in fact, I think there's a real concern that New York City could end up like Dearborn, Michigan, because they've got a Muslim communist as the mayor. A lot of their policies have gone sideways. And what does the Muslim mayor have to say about Islamic bomb throwers? He blames what he calls white supremacy. Now, that requires some explanation as well. So, but on the Republican side of things, what does it mean when President Trump says he's going to play hardball? Here's what he said. He announced yesterday, this is Donald Trump, he will not sign any bills at all until the Save America Act has been passed. Now, what does that act do? It does three very sensible things. Number one, to be able to vote in America, you have to prove you're an American citizen. Pretty common sense to me. Number two, you have to produce government photo ID. That's sensible as well. And number three, your ballot can't arrive a week after Election Day. It has to arrive by close of business on Election Day. And Donald Trump has said, I'm not going to sign any bills whatsoever until that has passed. And frankly, that's a message for all these weak-willed Republicans. It is the Republicans who are the problem, jokers like Thune and company, who've decided to go rhino on all of us. You know, I'm about up to here, and I know some people have actually said, I am done with the Republican Party. I call myself a conservative first. I call myself a Republican second. And why? Because the Republicans are constantly telling us, just give us the reins of power. Give us a majority in the House. You've got it. Give us a majority in the Senate. You've got it. Give us a president in the Oval Office who's a Republican who will sign legislation. You've got that, too. And now that you've got all of those things, you completely turn into a bunch of cowards and say, we're not going to pass the SAVE Act. I think Donald Trump is right. He says it supersedes everything else, must go to the front of the line. I, as president, will not sign other bills until this is passed. That's what Donald Trump put out yesterday. So I've asked you in the X poll today, should Donald Trump hold up other bills until Congress passes proof of citizenship voting requirements? My answer to that is yes. It is the question is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, here in the Pacific Northwest. And by the way, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. Every single day, we will do what we have done for almost 30 years. We serve the needs of the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. Consider this. Now that the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled, can we get Washington State school superintendent back under control? I think the answer to that is yes, but again, it's going to take courage from the Republicans. But Washington House Republicans are now asking for the superintendent of public instruction, Chris Rygdahl, and boy, is he a piece of work, for their policies regarding so-called gender identity and parental rights. Now, what happened in the Supreme Court decision last week? They decided in a California case that the state's ban on public schools disclosing student gender identity to who? Their moms and dads. The court said that parents challenging the policy will probably succeed in proving it violates their right to direct the upbringing and the education of their children. So the U.S. Supreme Court reinstated a lower court ruling that blocked the state of California from enforcing its ban. Well, you know what's going on. March the 4th, the superintendent of public instruction, that is the aforementioned Chris Rygdahl, piece of work if there ever was one. House GOP lawmakers argue there is no meaningful difference between California's policy that was challenged and the U.S. Supreme Court said the people challenging it, the parents who say we want to know what's going on with our kids, are likely to prevail in court. That there's no difference between California's policy and the policy in the state of Washington. So the lawmakers are saying we want an update by today. Close of business today, before the legislative session is over, that updates us on where Chris Rygdahl stands when it comes to letting parents know what is going on with their kids. Now, you might remember about 6 years ago, there was a Senate bill. It's 5689. It was aimed at preventing harassment and discrimination among transgender kids, but it kept what was going on with those kids a secret from their parents. It told schools to comply with a model transgender policy in accordance with the rules written by lawmakers? No, written by the superintendent of public instruction. The policy encourages a designated school employee to ask transgender students how they would like to be addressed in class and in correspondence with their family and conferences with their parent or guardian. Because it's not always clear what degree of support a transgender student may have at home, schools are encouraged to ask the student, what do you want to be called in class, but then not tell the parents what is going on. And then there was the press release about 2 years ago from, again, Chris Rygdahl at the head of the school system. And what he said was, not requiring or compelling school staff to tell the parents what's going on. In fact, it said disclosing a student's transgender status, legal name, or gender assigned at birth without their permission may be a violation of that law. Well, now that the U.S. Supreme Court has weighed in on it, said, number one, the parents in California are likely to be proved right when they go to court and they pursue their case, the case can go forward. Well, since there's not a dime's worth of difference between the policy in California and the policy in Washington State, lawmakers at least are asking Chris Rygdahl, superintendent of public instruction, what's your order to schools now? And I have a feeling if he doesn't come up with something sensible, they're going to propose changes from Olympia. Glad to be with you on a Monday. Always glad to take your calls. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. The Northwest Nonsense is coming up next.
Show today? Find Lars's thoughts and get the podcast right now at LarsLarson.com. Now, here's Lars Larson.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
The great moment every day, where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Well, Democrat Party members are working hard to put a smiley face on the Oregon legislative session that wrapped up on Friday night. Senate Majority Leader Casey Jama, yes, he's a Democrat, declared Oregonians sent us here to stand up for them. This session, we worked hard to do exactly that. Now, that's the PR spin. What actually happened? Well, while President Trump got tax cuts expanded and extended, Democrats who control both houses of the legislature in Oregon gutted those tax cuts by hundreds of millions of dollars taken out of your pockets. A ban on gun buying that barely passed the voters because, by the way, it's unconstitutional, was made worse by the legislature's actions. And the big daddy of all anti-democratic action, moving a vote on Oregon's multi-billion dollar tax hike to fund ODOT. Voters wanted to vote in November with a maximum turnout by citizens. The Democrat Party moved it to May so democracy could be held to a minimum. If you sense an irony there, so do I. Just remember all those anti-citizen actions when you consider Tina Kotek's re-election plan, although her re-election plan seems to have run into a real obstacle. This governor is so bad, so unpopular in America, so unpopular even with her own Democrat friends in Oregon, that even her buddies in the Teachers Labor Union and the Working Families Party flatly refused to endorse her this year. Yeah, they announced that last week. The Democrat Party controlled Teachers Labor Union and the Working Families Party said, we are not going to endorse Tina Kotek. They did last time. They did not this time. Your calls are always welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery, and get better fast at Multnomah Medical Clinic. Should a women's dress shop be able to refuse to hire a man who identifies as a woman to help the women try on their dresses? Well, a man pretending to be a woman freaked out after a women's dress store in Maryland refused to hire him to help women try on clothing because he's a man. He says, you're on notice. I'll bet he plans a lawsuit. My favorite post today, Lars, first time reaching out, but I'm fed up. Bellingham's homeless situation has gotten completely out of control, especially in the King Mountain neighborhood. In multiple wetland areas, there are large entrenched encampments operating like autonomous zones. 200 plus people from the city's estimate with their own informal hierarchy and control inside the camps. Police reportedly will only enter these areas in pairs, and the fire department requires police support just to go in and put out the fires. Two major fires in the last month with hundreds of residents in nearby apartments and homes. Yet at the same time, outside groups are bringing in supplies like propane, gasoline, needles, Narcan, tents, sleeping bags, and other materials on private property. The question many people are asking is, who's responsible for the growing piles of garbage and the hazardous waste left behind? Where are these groups getting their money? And do people understand that many of these items quickly become a form of currency within the camps, sometimes fueling more dangerous activity? People are frustrated. They're looking for answers. Even city representatives have said publicly that unless an official directly witnesses something happening, their ability to act can be limited. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you
ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
Today's Daily Grill, I'm going to award to the Washington State Democrat Party. Its lawmakers have now decided to penalize marriage with a very expensive new tax. Now, consider this. Senate Bill 6346, this is the one that's described as the so-called millionaire's tax. And you say, well, it only affects those with incomes above $1 million with a tax of nearly 10% on that income. The tax is based on your federal adjusted gross income. Now, guess what happens? If you had two individuals, and this is Washington Policy Center's pointed this out, let's say you have two people, both of whom work in a profession and make $700,000 each. If they are married, you're going to be penalized by tens of thousands of dollars in taxes. If those two same people have been living together but are not married, then they are exempt from paying the tax altogether. So in other words, we're talking about $40,000 in new taxes if those two sign a marriage certificate. Democrats are really that crazy that they're going to penalize you for getting married? Doesn't make sense to me. Be glad to hear the naysayer call on today's best email, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarsen.com. Mark writes in, Lars, with the new change in supreme leader in Iran, I wonder if anything has changed. The son of the late Ayatollah in charge now, with thousands in the streets cheering him on, I can't see the difference. This happened over the course of a day or so. I give them credit for such speedy vote counting. No doubt mail-in voting, late ballots counted, early voting, and no voter ID required. Must be a lot of Democrats in Iran, signed Mark. To your calls now. It's Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network. Let's go first to Terry. Hey, Terry, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. Yeah, voter ID.
Yeah.
So it's been probably 8 years since I've seen a doctor. I'm on my way to an appointment right now. Last night, I had to fill out about 8 pages of information to give to the doctor. And amongst that information, they want to know what my driver's license is. Now, you know, as soon as I get there, they're going to ask for my insurance card and my driver's license. So if I have to have a photo ID to see a doctor, why shouldn't I have to have a photo ID to vote?
I think you're absolutely right, because there is nothing in the law or the Constitution that suggests you have to show your photo ID to see a doctor. There is everything in the Constitution and the law to suggest
it. They say that they must give you care, you know, whether you have ID or not. They have to take care of you.
Yep. That is absolutely right. So imagine the irony. You ask the Democrats, why do I need photo ID to cash a check, to open a bank account, for most things that you do in society today? Very ordinary things. I mean, even if you never fly on an airplane, if you want to check into a hotel, good luck doing it without photo ID. If you want to open up a bank account, absolutely you have to have photo ID. And yet somehow illegal aliens get away without doing it at all. And the Democrats are absolutely desperate to make sure those illegal aliens keep on voting. Glad to be with you on a Monday. Always glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarsen.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larsen Show. Larson wants to hear from you, even if you disagree. Naysayers get to cut the line at 866-HEY-LARS. Now, here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails, and I explain the math on that marriage penalty that Democrats in Olympia have decided to impose on married couples who make a large income, that you would be subject to the marriage tax if each one in a couple, you know, the man and the woman each make $700,000 a year, you would not be subject to the millionaire's tax. If you get married, then your household income is $1.4 million, which makes $400,000 of your income subject to a tax of 9.9%. That means that because you got married, the Democrats have decided you should pay a $40,000 penalty, 10%, roughly 9.9% of $400,000. That's how the math works on that. For anybody who was confused about it, apparently a few people were confused about it. In any case, glad to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network, serving Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk. Taking your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we'll put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Let me go first to Brian. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, hey, Lars, I had listened to you an awful lot, and since we got the Save America Act getting signed today, I was kind of wondering whether or not I'm going to be able to vote without a real ID.
Well, why wouldn't you get a real ID so that you can prove that you are born in America or at least have American citizenship? What would hold you back from doing that?
Well, I've always had ID. I don't have the funds to go get real ID.
Hold on, you don't have an extra 35 cents a month? A penny a day?
Well, I thought it was more than that.
It's $30 extra to get a real ID in the state of Oregon. I think the same fee applies in Washington. So $30, it's good for 8 years. So that's roughly, it's a little less than $4 a year, which is about 35 cents a month. I mean, it doesn't, and it doesn't seem like a, you know, an extraordinary requirement to say we want to make sure that you are, in fact, an American citizen, not just legally in the United States, but you are an American citizen, and it would cost you essentially a penny a day for the next 8 years.
Well, okay, I do understand that. So, yeah, I'll have to come up with something there. But I was just wondering, like, the people like me that don't know that they have to go get a real ID to vote.
Well, Brian, you listen to this show all the time. I realize not everybody listens. I wish everybody would listen. But do you think we've been talking about voter ID long enough that you'd have to be living under a rock somewhere or in a cave somewhere to be unaware of the voter ID issue?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
And frankly, if you're living under a rock or that uninformed that you haven't heard voter ID talked about endlessly for the last, I don't know, in on this show, 30 years, by Donald Trump, 10 years, by Democrats who don't want real ID, they don't want voter ID because they have to have all those illegal alien votes to win. I mean, if you're that uninformed that you've never heard of the voter ID issue or know that you have to have voter ID, maybe I don't want you voting anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was just, I didn't realize we had to have real ID, and that makes a lot of sense.
Well, what it is, you have a driver's license, right?
Correct.
Okay, a driver's license costs you $60 every 8 years. So for the privilege of driving, you have to get a driver's license, and that's $60. If you want to get one that's called real ID, where you walk in with your passport or your birth certificate, it's an extra $30, and the license is good for 8 years. I did the math quickly. You know, 8 into 30 is just a little bit less than $4 a year, or about 35 cents a month.
Okay, that makes a whole lot of sense. I try
to make sense even on a Monday, Brian. I mean, I'm doing my best to make sense, and so there you go.
Hey, I appreciate it, Lars. I just wanted to check on that and you know, let everybody else know.
Well, now I will tell you this, Brian. Do you know what your Democrat? Do you have some Democrat friends?
yeah, I do. Not
okay.
Friends, but yeah.
You ought to, next time you run into your Democrat friends, say, "Hey, can you help me understand this? You say black people are too stupid to get a driver's license, and when they say, well, yeah, that's the problem, black people are too stupid, they don't know how to get a driver's license, ask them, have you met any black people that don't have a driver's license? And they tell you, yeah, I'd get a driver's license, but I'm black, so I don't know how to do it. And ask them if they've ever, ever, ever in their lives heard of a person who says, I can't get a driver's license because I'm black. Now, it might end the conversation and maybe the evening's get-together abruptly and prematurely, but, you know, it'd be worth doing it just to see the look on their face, because they all know the argument. They call the show, Brian, all the time. They'll say, well, you know, black people, they don't know how to get a driver's license. I mean, this is the same crowd of people who probably cheered. Do you know what Joe Biden said on Friday? I didn't grab the soundbite, or I'd play it for you. You know, this guy who at one point said, well, you know, poor kids are just as smart as white kids. Remember when he said that back in the day?
Oh, I believe so, yeah.
You know what he was saying? He was saying black kids are, you know, that black kids are just as smart as white kids. Well, that's true. There's some very smart black kids and some very dumb white kids. So what? Well, what he said, he showed up at the memorial service for Jesse Jackson, right? And he showed up, and all these people are given speeches. They even introduced President Harris and President Hillary Clinton, which kind of tells you how dumb the Democrats can be. And he literally got up to speak, and I don't know why they let him out of the old folks' home at all. But he stood up there, and he told a predominantly black crowd. He said, well, you know what? I'm smarter than most of you. That was Joe Biden talking to a mostly black crowd. Now, how do you suppose that went over?
I'm sorry I missed that.
I mean, in some ways, as a conservative, I'd like Joe Biden to keep on giving speeches for another 10 years. I really would, because he really illustrates just how crazy some of the Democrats are. Speaking of crazy Democrats, from the Pacific Northwest, I got to bring this up. Pramila Jayapal, member of Congress, has fallen back on an argument that most people haven't heard since the 1850s, when Democrat slave owners ran around saying, well, how the heck are we going to get all this cotton picked if we don't have slaves to pick it? Take a listen. That's Pramila Jayapal. Sorry about that, Joel. We'll have to get to that soundbite a little bit later. But this is, you know, Pramila Jayapal is making an argument that would have been very familiar to slave owners in the United States, because they made the argument, there's no way to get all that cotton picked if we don't have somebody out there to do it. We need the slaves to do it. They're now making that very same argument about illegal aliens. You're listening to A Monday on the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. You know that when you're...
If you don't want to talk but want to be heard, email Lars at talk@larslarson.com. He actually will read it. Now, here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I want to give you a little good news. The folks at Portland State University, they have decided, because they've had a gigantic drop-off in the number of students that they're getting, which is interesting. You allow a riot on your campus that does over $1 million damage to the library, and all of a sudden people decide they don't want to go to that university. Not exactly a giant surprise. Well, now, Portland State University is looking at a $35 million budget shortfall over the next 2 years. And what have they decided to do? I can actually endorse this move. They're going to cut about 16, maybe as many as 19 different academic departments. They're going to cut a lot of stuff that they don't need to have. For instance, university studies, which is what they call the school's interdisciplinary approach to general education. They're going to cut the conflict resolution program. They're also going to cut the Portland Center, which is a small study abroad program for students from Japan. They have decided to cut a bunch of those academic departments, save the money, and actually be able to operate within their budget. That, I think, is admirable. Glad to be with you on a Monday. Always glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com. Let's go to Mickey first. Hey, Mickey, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. Good to talk to you.
Thank you, sir.
How IP-28 got passed. This is a theory of mine that during these various No Kings rallies and what other rallies they're having in Portland, the petition gatherers have a captive audience, and these people will sign, probably sign for anything that's against us.
I think you might be right. And by the way, so everybody knows, Mickey referred to IP-28. IP-28 is the one that would forbid all hunting, all fishing, all farming, all raising of animals and slaughter of animals to provide food. It's one of the most cockamamie ideas you've ever heard of, and yet they appear to be getting close enough to getting the signatures they need to put it on the ballot, which is just over 125,000 signatures is what they're required to get. It probably will make the ballot. The scary thing is, do you think Oregonians would vote for it?
Lars, I am worried about what other wacky things they are going to come up with coming down the pipeline, as long as we keep having giant rallies where they get people to sign. I mean, I realize they're not getting all their signatures there, but they're getting a lot of them, I bet.
I'll bet you're right. It would seem like the right place to go to get signatures is these anti-American, anti-ICE, Antifa riots. They're probably a great place. The only question is, do they really have 125,000 people? Because most of those riots involve a few hundred people, maybe a couple of thousand at most. And they seem, in many cases, it seems to be the same people over and over again. Now, the question, and I've had people say, well, the Oregonians would never vote for that. I would agree generally, The only thing I'm concerned with is I didn't think the Oregonians would have okayed drug legalization, which they did in ballot measure 110. That thing won by, I think it was 12 percentage points. It was a pretty big win.
It was that. And I'm already putting the word out to as many hunters and fishers and regular folks that I can that this is coming down the pipeline. We are going to have this is going to be a fight, and we better be ready to fight it.
Yeah, and Mickey, anticipate this as well. When they did Measure 110, they got millions of dollars that came in from groups way outside the Pacific Northwest who said, we're going to put money behind that thing. You watch when the animal rights types say, if we can win Oregon, they start with something easy like Oregon, where it's already to the left. And if we can win there, then they can take that win and take it to other states as well.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's... That's what my concern is. Mickey, thanks very much. By the way, in Seattle, do you know what the Seattle police chief has now announced? He says any police officer, we talked about this policy last week, who violates the city's new policy that requires officers to go out and document what ICE is doing in the city of Seattle. Now, what does that mean? It means you're going to have one law enforcement agency, ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and they're going to go out to arrest illegal aliens. And then the Seattle Police Department, Seattle City Council, has told the police department, we want you to follow ICE around and document everything they do. They want police to do video recordings of what ICE does and try to find ICE breaking the law. And what Sean Barnes, the Seattle police chief, has said is he said, this would be a violation of our policy, which is a violation of the law. Officers could be placed on administrative leave. Per the collective bargaining agreement with the Seattle Police Union, Barnes has the power to fire police officers, and he might actually go out and fire them if they decide not to do what the chief is telling them to do. Now, what did the city decide to do? They directed the police to follow a set of protocols regarding any ICE enforcement actions that happen inside the city limits of Seattle. Under the policy, police officers arriving at the scene of any federal law enforcement agency must begin taking video on their in-car and body-worn video cameras, in addition to asking for identification from ICE agents to assure that they are not impersonating law enforcement agents as part of gathering evidence for possible transmission to prosecutors. Well, hold on. So you're going to have a bunch of ICE agents who are trying to take illegal aliens into custody legally and lawfully, and they're going to have the police interrupt what they're doing to demand that they show ID to the Seattle police officers so that they can determine whether or not they're imposters. Also, the story written by the Center Square says to make sure that they are not impersonating law enforcement agents. Can I tell you a problem with that to begin with? ICE is law enforcement. So is CBP. So are the federal marshals. So are all of those people. And if they obstruct justice, you might just find Seattle police officers being taken into custody by the federal government. Let's go to Ken. Hey, Ken, what's on your mind?
Yeah, you wanted to know who would vote for that crazy law about you can't go hunting or fishing or grow animals.
Yep.
It's not the Oregonians that are going to vote for that. You're quite right about that part. But it's all the transplants that come here from California, all the liberals that have shown up here. They're the ones that are voting for it and signing the petitions, just like they're the ones down there at the ICE buildings. But anyway, our problem is all the transplants that have come in here, and they really don't understand how important hunting is when you have a lot of open area like we do in Oregon.
I think you're right. And they don't understand how important it is to farmers and ranchers. Raising those animals makes money. Take the animals away, they're not making money anymore, and those farms and ranchers are out of business.
The Lars Larson Show. FM News 101 KXL is Portland's number one source for news and information. KXL FM, Portland, Vancouver, Salem.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. President Trump says he will hold a press conference later this afternoon, his first formal question and answer session with reporters since launching military operations against Iran. CBS's Stacey Lynn reports the president is reassessing his timeline for the war with Iran.
President Trump told CBS News the war could be over soon. He said the U.S. is very far ahead of schedule compared to his initial 4 to 5 week estimate, claiming the opposing forces have no Navy, no communications, no Air Force, and says their drones and missiles are largely destroyed.
The U.N. is warning the conflict with Iran increasingly threatens civilians and the environment. CBS's Cammie McCormick.
The U.N. says the conflict is driving rising civilian casualties and displacing more people.
We continue to raise the alarm over the humanitarian impact of escalating violence across parts of the Middle East.
Spokesman Stefan Dujarric says there are also serious environmental worries.
We're particularly concerned by the number of reports of recent strikes on oil facilities, which could have serious environmental consequences across the region.
And he said rising oil prices will impact everything, including UN operations.
An explosion bigger than the deadly 2013 Boston Marathon bombing is what a complaint says two men were aiming for when they allegedly ignited explosives outside of the New York City mayor's mansion on Saturday. New York City Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch says they now face federal charges and...
As alleged in the complaint, the defendants were inspired by ISIS. There should be no confusion about what ISIS constitutes. It is a designated foreign terrorist organization responsible for deadly terrorist attacks across the globe.
There's a settlement in the government's case against a concert and ticketing giant, CBS's Deborah Rodriguez.
Sources tell CBS News Ticketmaster and its parent company Live Nation, which reps stars like Harry Styles, U2, and Lady Gaga, have agreed to pay $280 million in damages to 40 states that sued, accusing the company of undermining the competition and hurting consumers. The deal spares the company the threat of its business being broken up.
And on Wall Street, a last-minute flip on Wall Street as stocks ended up and oil ends down after President Trump tells CBS News that with the war in Iran, it may soon end. Those stocks just getting ready to close. That the Dow right now is up 239 points. Maryland congressional Democrats with no advance notice inspected an ICE facility in Baltimore today. Senator Chris Van Hollen says it was empty, but there were signs it had been overcrowded at one point.
If you go through the rooms, you'll see that just one of the five rooms had a sign saying maximum number of people, 70.
This is
the stars shine brighter on CBS One.
This is a slam dunk.
So cute.
Gail came in singing for me today.
On CBS Mornings.
Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And
Lars.
Now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Monday. We're live on the Radio Northwest Network, and I'm glad to get your calls. We got a lot to consider. Number one, should Seattle have detailed its police to go out and monitor and video record all actions of ICE within the city limits of Seattle? As crazy as that is, the Seattle Police Officers Guild, we haven't heard from them yet, but the former president of the Seattle Police Union said, no, that's absolutely crazy. And he said it the day that the mayor of Seattle, the new communist mayor of Seattle, announced that policy. But now the police chief has said, if anybody violates the order that was given to us by the city council, you may in fact be disciplined. You could in fact be fired. So you've got to consider that. This segment of the show is brought to you by 540training.com, concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. Number two, Washington state lawmakers have already approved a bill. The legislative session doesn't end until later this week. It approves allowing refugees, asylum seekers, visa holders, and non-citizens to be empowered to enforce American law. in the state of Washington. That is, if Governor Bob Ferguson is crazy enough to sign the bill. It is Senate Bill 5068. It expands eligibility for several public safety positions to anybody legally authorized to work in the United States. You don't have to be a citizen. You don't have to be a green card holder. You don't have to be any of that. You can simply go to work in law enforcement. It could include people who've been given work authorization who entered the United States illegally. So imagine this. Somebody who's already violated the laws of the United States in a number of ways might be empowered to become a cop in the state of Washington. How crazy is that? Anyway, glad to get your calls. Let me go first to David. Hey, David, welcome to the program. It's Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm so happy to be able to talk to you. I think you do a great job on the show to inform people of things that we don't know. My call is, since I live here in Oregon, I moved from Florida to Oregon about 8 years ago. How you feel if we went to the sales tax instead of the state tax, would that benefit the people more? Because how I feel is it would be a fair tax that anybody that would come into the state would pay a portion of whatever they bought. And then it would also save us workers having to pay that tax, because I didn't have that in Florida, a state tax.
The short answer is no. The short answer is no. And, David, let me tell you why. The state of Oregon right now gets about 10% of everything you make. So if you make $100,000 a year, in round numbers, you pay about $10,000 in taxes. Now, are you assuming you'd have a sales tax that would actually collect about the same amount of money and not, say, cut Oregon's government revenue in half? Are you assuming that the new sales tax would generate as much as the income tax?
I would just think it would generate more, thinking that people would be paying sales tax on anything they bought, especially when...
No, but you're not answering my question, David.
Okay.
Are you assuming you would generate the same amount of revenue? It's like if you were going to get a new job and they said part of the job is on commission, part of it is salary. Your current job is salary. I would assume you'd want to get a new job that would pay you at least as much as the old job. Am I right?
Right, but I don't think I would get any more money.
Well, but here's the thing. How big a sales tax are you willing to tolerate? Would you be okay with 20%?
Oh, no.
Okay, but hold on, David. Let's find out, how would a sales tax, if it's like most sales taxes in most states, how would it apply? Do you pay sales tax on your mortgage or rent?
No, not here in Oregon.
Okay, that's your number one bill in your household, am I right? Hello?
Are you there? Yes, are you there?
Is it your number one bill, your mortgage or your rent?
Yes.
Okay, so you wouldn't pay sales. How about food? Would you pay sales tax on food? In most states, you don't. Would you pay sales tax on medicine? In most states, you don't. There are a lot of things you don't pay sales tax on. So if you want to replace a 10% income tax, so right now they're getting 10% of everything you make. In round numbers, you get a little deductibility for federal tax and that sort of thing. You're going to replace it with a tax on part of what you make. Is most of what you spend in your household rent or mortgage, food, and medicine?
Well, rent and food is probably my most expensive.
Exactly, which means you only spend a portion of your paycheck on things that would be taxed by a sales tax. So if you're going to generate the same amount of money for the state of Oregon that a 10% income tax generates, you're going to need a sales tax of 17%, maybe even 20% to generate the same amount of money.
I just thought that there's probably more people in Oregon that don't work compared to the people that do work, so then they would also generate taxes.
Well, hold on. Let's take somebody who doesn't work in Oregon. Does somebody who doesn't work in Oregon have rent or mortgage?
Some do, I guess.
Some do. But most of them spend most of their money on food, right? Do people who don't work and don't have any income, do they buy a car, which might be subject to sales tax? No. Do they buy a lot of new furniture? No. So what is it these non-working people are going to pay sales tax on?
Well, they'd buy, they'd pay sales tax on stuff that you don't eat, like, you know, cleaning supplies, clothing.
How much do you spend in it? Would it be fair? Do you spend $1,000 a year on cleaning supplies?
Probably not.
Okay. You might spend $800 a year. I mean, if you're spending $75 a month, $800 a year, so you're going to pay sales tax on that. Are you going to collect very much money on a sales tax that doesn't include everything?
Probably not, I guess.
Okay, and can I tell you a trick that the state of Oregon did? Way back in the day, the original tax that was paid by citizens was property tax, and people felt that property taxes had got too high. Do you know how they suggested reducing property taxes? By having an income tax. They said, if we have an income tax, we can reduce your property tax. And they did for a time. And now property taxes are too high, income taxes are too high, and most people say, well, why don't we have a sales tax, too, if they'll reduce our property taxes and income taxes? Do you know that trick worked once? They persuaded Oregonians, if you just give us the right to tax your income, we'll reduce your property taxes. And now both taxes are too high, because once they get the camel's nose under the tent, there's no end to it. Oregon has some of the highest income taxes in America right now.
My fear is that if they would ever try to also come back again and try to do a sales tax, would you have a sales tax, a state tax?
Do you know,
kind of like California.
You're a transplant from Florida, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Oregon in sales taxes have been voted on 9 different times by Oregonians. Do you know what Oregonians said every single time?
I hope they said no.
They said no all 9 times, and if they vote on it again, they'll probably say no again. David, thank you very much. Back in just a moment. What about Chevron that may shut down more of its refineries in California? That's next. Hey. Do your knees.
Interviews, podcasts, local and national news. Get it all at LarsLarson.com. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. Well, the climate insanity in the state of California goes on, and it might just result in 2 more huge refineries being shut down. And I think that's absolutely nuts, because under any other circumstances, even without what is going on in Iran right now, you would think that the United States would have it in its best interest to make sure this country has as much ability to produce gasoline and diesel and all the other distillates of oil to be able to supply the needs of this country. And having one state, in this case, California, with its governor, Gavin Newsom, that has decided to wage war on refineries. Because if you assume, well, those refineries, they'll just move somewhere else. Well, have you ever taken a look at a refinery? They are a gigantic industrial application. To be able to build a brand new one, and America hasn't seen a brand new one, to my knowledge, in 30 years. To be able to build one, even in some of the best states for that, some of the Gulf states on the Gulf of America or Texas, it's going to be a really, really tough haul. It usually also is going to involve billions of dollars of new investments. And I think the oil industry has been really reluctant to pour a lot of money into building new refineries when everybody on the Democrat Party side of the aisle, that'd be Joe Biden on down, has said, we plan to put your entire industry out of business within the next decade. So if you're in a business and you're an oil company and you say, we make refined oil into gasoline and diesel and Vaseline and all the other stuff they make out of oil, should we go out and spend several billion dollars and, I don't know, 5, 10, 15 years building a new refinery when there are folks within the government who may be in charge in 5 or 10 or 15 years, God forbid, who will simply say, I'm glad you built that big shiny refinery to all the modern standards, but you can't operate it because we don't believe in oil. And if you don't believe me, go back to one of Joe Biden's speeches. I think it was his first State of the Union address, in which he literally told this joint session of Congress, in 10 years, we won't even be using oil. Now, I realize that Joe Biden is both half crazy and his brain has failed. But he got a big laugh out of the members of Congress on the Republican side who laughed at the idea that we're going to be out of needing oil in 10 years. Well, guess what's happening in California? I'm going to tell you the details on that because they've already managed to force two big refineries to shut down and leave the state. And now it appears that an unelected board has made decisions to try to put more refineries out of business. First, though, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you're a naysayer, we put you right to the head of the list. The poll on X, because we put up a brand new poll question every day from the news of the day. Yesterday, President Trump came out on Truth Social, and he said he will not be signing any bills until the Save America Act is passed, the one that requires photo ID, proof you're a citizen, and your ballot has to be in by close of business on Election Day. Well, the president has said he's not going to sign any bills at all until the Save Act is passed. And he needs to talk to some of those Republicans like John Thune, who have decided to go weak-willed when it comes to this. They don't want to push hard to get the SAVE Act passed. And you would think if there was anything that was going to get the SAVE Act passed, it would be the fact that the Democrats are absolutely desperate to make sure it doesn't pass. And if you wonder, why would the Democrats care? If this is just going to say to Americans, you have to prove you're an American, you have to have picture ID, and your ballot has to be in on Election Day. Because that would cut into the ability of the Democrat Party specifically to be able to cheat in elections. Because they want those illegal aliens voting. They want the non-citizens voting. They want to be able to count ballots that come in a week after Election Day. They want all of that, and they want non-citizens in that vote. So if the SAVE Act passes, that's going to stop. Should Donald Trump hold up other bills until the Congress passes proof of citizenship voting requirements? My answer to that is going to be yes. You can answer the question any way you like. You'll find it at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. So let me go back to California and what they're doing. There is an unelected board appointed by the governor called the California Air Resources Board. It's known as the CARB Board, and they're designed to make sure that California has clean air and all the rest of that stuff. Here's the problem. Governor Gavin Newsom has been told. Chevron has written to the governor of California, and he said, look, we are very concerned that if these new amendments are made to the cap and invest, formerly cap and trade regulation, it's all this carbon nonsense that has been used to artificially raise the cost of gasoline and every other kind of fuel in America. So what's going to happen? The letter coming from Chevron President Andy Walls says the price of gasoline, which is already in California about $1.56 per gallon higher than the rest of the country on average, higher. And what Andy Walz, the president of Chevron, has said, if you do this stuff, the price of gasoline is going to increase by more than $1 per gallon by 2030 if you make this regulatory change. And there will be about 500,000 petroleum industry jobs in California alone, 536,000 jobs that are simply going to go away if the CARB board manages to push this nonsense through. And what he says in the letter, the proposed regulation will cripple the survivability of the state's remaining refineries, which will result in California losing the entire industry to this misguided program. This regulation will increase transportation and aviation fuel prices for consumers. It risks significant job losses, including high-paying union jobs, while reducing funding for essential public services. He's talking about the taxes that they collect on both gasoline. And California does it even worse. California has a gasoline tax, but when you buy a gallon of gasoline, you pay sales tax on the whole price, meaning part of what you're paying sales taxes on is taxes. I mean, California has taxes on taxes on taxes. He says it will upend California's fuels market and threaten critical energy and national security assets. Let me tell you something else. There are efforts right now by the Iranians to try to hack into systems inside the United States. And the oil industry isn't the only one, but it's a major one. So imagine this. Iranian hackers say, we're going to create chaos for the United States. We've run out of Air Force. We've run out of Navy. We're running out of missiles and drones. How else can we attack the United States? Well, if they could hack into the oil industry and be able to shut it down or even cripple it to some extent, they would cause a real problem for the United States. And all on top of all this, California is trying to put the oil refineries out of business altogether. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Surrounded by Northwest liberals.
I cannot stand these morons any longer. If you don't come with me this instant, I shall run amok.
Come to the place where common sense prevails. The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And since I barely know the difference between Brent crude and West Texas Intermediate, if we're going to talk about oil and how oil factors in to what's going on in Iran right now and the rising price of gasoline in America right now, I think we've got to talk to a guy who actually knows what he's doing. And Ray Trevino is an oil and gas expert. He runs the privately funded oil and gas exploration company called POS, which is located in Fort Worth, Texas. Mr. Trevino, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
How's the oil industry right now? I mean, for a while there, I was hearing from folks, yeah, the price is so low that there's a lot of drilling that isn't happening here and it is happening elsewhere. Well, it appears the dispute in Iran right now, the war on Iran, may have fixed the oil prices temporarily, but not necessarily in a good way.
Yes, they definitely have gone up tremendously in the last basically 2 weeks and especially the last 48 hours. What we're actually continuing to watch, though, is Iran and the Strait of Hormuz. The real question is, what's going to happen? As we know, this morning, oil prices shot up way above 100 to about $120, a little less, and they've come back down since then, but we still are way above higher than where we were before this whole thing started, and we're even coming back down now as well as the market continues to react in a more common sense way than early this morning. And what I mean by that is the markets react in a way that they don't know the uncertainty. And now we have a little bit more certainty going on. We know that this war looks like it's only going to continue. And we hope that it doesn't get anything major. However, we are still trading at about $85 as we talk right now, which is $20 less than where it was before the market officially opened here in the United States this morning. Well, and what we're watching also. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. What's the benchmark we had to look at is pre-war and now during the war? Was it in the 60s or was it in the 70s at that point?
It was in the 60s. It was in the low 60s pre this conflict. And it had been slowly creeping up until that time. And even last Friday, it jumped $10. So it took a whole week to go from about $65 to $95. Okay. And now that we're there, we're now already back down. And this is because the markets have reacted. They know that this war is going to continue. However, the G7 group, which includes Spain, France, Canada, the United States, Britain, we've all decided to tap into our reserves. And we should be announcing, if we haven't already, to lift the sanctions on Russian oil. And that is huge. No pun intended. I'm sorry, I'm laughing at myself. No pun intended.
You say it with a Y, right, Ray? Like the president does. It's huge.
It's huge. It's huge. Because this president and their team is playing chess. I kid you not. Why is it important that we're lifting those sanctions on Russian oil? Because that means now China will not be able to purchase cheap oil around the world. We have now taken away China's three major importers of oil, Venezuela, Iran, and Russia. And they were getting cheap oil from all three locations. So while we are in this conflict with Iran, we're actually hurting China in the long run. And believe it or not, we are hurting Russia, which should then bring them back to the negotiation table as well to end this war in Ukraine. It is a massive domino effect that started with Venezuela.
Well, and in fact, you and I both suspect, it sounds like you suspect the same thing I do, and that is that President Trump isn't doing things as I'm going to act on this one thing. I'm going to act on this one thing that's going to have effects in these half a dozen dozen other places.
Yes, that is correct. And I just got done doing an interview on a wonderful show, another great show called Power of the Permian, where I explained how Venezuela was the start of that. The mainstream media and the markets around the world have now recognized the dark fleet, and that is oil tankers full of oil that are not being accounted for on the global supply and that are being sold at a discount. And their hub was Venezuela. And with all of that now moving forward, we now are stopping that oil, and we're controlling that oil in Venezuela. And a big importer from Venezuela was Iran. So now we're dealing with Iran, and we could very much see us being able to control the oil in Iran just like we're controlling the oil in Venezuela right now.
Well, let me ask you this, Ray. You said this war is going to go on for a time, except it seems as though most of the Iranian Navy is now deep-sixed, and an awful lot of their missiles seem to be running out. Their drones are running out. They have almost no air force to speak of, and we control the skies over Iran. How are they going to continue a war when almost everything they have to fight a war with, short of the IRGC, is now incapacitated?
That's a great question. And the reason for part of the reason for the spike in oil is because of the lack of insurance that places like Lloyd's of London was not giving to the tankers that are going through the Strait of Hormuz. We definitely took out the military side, or the naval side, excuse me, to be more specific, of the threat of the Strait of Hormuz. However, the insurance companies around the world are actually the ones holding up oil tankers right now in the Strait of Hormuz.
Well, it sounds like a great, I know that Lloyd's is famously the only folks willing to write the insurance on this. Sounds like a great opportunity for somebody, a U.S. company, to say, well, then why don't we provide the insurance? Because I understand you have to have it to operate oil tankers, but it sounds like a tremendously profitable business as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. And last week, President Trump said he was working with American companies to try to bring these ships back on the water, so to speak. And it's been a much slower process than anticipated.
Well, and in fact, if they close down the Strait of Hormuz, don't I understand this correctly, that the primary folks who would be cut off if you close the Strait of Hormuz to oil tankers would be China and India, Iran's biggest customers?
That is correct. If we did that, so that would actually then hurt Iran, and they would shoot themselves in the foot. And the other person it would actually hurt is California. They get a lot of their oil, believe it or not, due to their silly regulations from places like Iran.
Well, it won't hurt them at all, Ray. I understand they plan to put all the oil refineries out of business. I mean, if you don't have refineries, what the heck are you going to do with all that oil?
You are absolutely right. You've definitely got done your research. Yes, sir. They are down to one or none refineries in California.
And Chevron is telling them, if you keep pushing forward these crazy rules, that one's going to go away, and so will 500,000 jobs. Now, you don't really think Gavin Newsom, he does want to be president one of these days. Do you think that's going to work well in his campaign?
Not at all.
Yeah. So I'm kind of hoping that this gets straightened out, and that it gets straightened out very quickly. I'd love to see somebody take the place of Lloyd's of London. That is Ray Trevino. Ray runs POS, the energy privately owned oil and gas exploration company located in Fort Worth, Texas. Back in a moment. I'll get you your phone calls and emails. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Something to say? Give Lars a call at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get you your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. I do want to mention this story because we just said it in passing last week. Tyler Jaggers. Tyler Jaggers was one of the rescue swimmers employed by the U.S. Coast Guard, and he was on a rescue mission. It was a medical evac mission off the Washington coast. He died, and we don't have all the particulars. The Coast Guard isn't saying much, but the Rescue Swimmer Association says that Apparently, Jaggers was being lowered to the deck of a ship where he was going to help evac a man who was having tremendous medical problems, and they needed to get him out of there. And somehow, Jaggers died because he apparently fell to the deck of the ship from the helicopter. Clearly, that wasn't the plan, but he had been on life support last week, and we got the word, I believe it was Friday night, that he had passed away. He was treated Joint Base Lewis McChord, JBLM, in south of Seattle, and he died on Thursday night. We got the word on Friday night. But what happened was that in a social media post, the young lady who became his fiancée, she was standing at his hospital bedside. The story goes that his father, Tyler Jagger's father, put the ring on her hand and said that some of his closest buddies said that he was getting ready to propose to this young lady. And she became his fiance after he was already in critical condition. It sounds like they then got married, even though that was near the end of his life. The kind of courage that those people have to have. I mean, I've done news stories about the rescue swimmers. In fact, I recall a trip we took down to Astoria and Ilwaco, to profile them 30 years ago. The idea that somebody is brave enough not only to work in the U.S. Coast Guard and to go out on those ships that often, you know, the rescue ships will go out and roll over as they're trying to get to a boat that's in distress. And then the rescue swimmers are of an entirely different breed. The idea that you'd gear up and either be ready to be lowered onto the deck of a ship, oftentimes in horrible, horrible conditions, both ocean conditions and weather conditions, or in some cases have to jump out of a helicopter into the water, swim to the people in distress, and then be able to get them to safety. It is absolutely extraordinary. And at this point, it was a very touching moment to hear that they too had become engaged. After he was in terrible distress and he passed away on Thursday night, the Coast Guard also announced that they were advancing him to Chief Petty Officer Second Class in the U.S. Coast Guard. May God rest his soul and rest in peace to Tyler Jaggers. And I guess even under the circumstances, congratulations to the woman who was able to marry him before he passed away. Terrible story, but in that case, at least the thing that Tyler Jaggers had intended, that he would become engaged to this woman, that he would become her husband. And I'm glad to see that that the family was able to make that happen. To your calls now. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Jerry's on the line. Hey, Jerry, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, thanks for taking my call. Hey, sure. I just wanted to say, you know, with California wanting to get rid of all these refineries, why can't we say, okay, you want to do that, you ain't going to get no fuel or gasoline or diesel, and see how long that lasts for them?
I think it would be great. Frankly, Jerry, if the state of California says we don't like the oil industry, we want to drive the oil industry out of business, The damage it would do to people, to average people in California, I realize that some of them were the ones who elected people like Gavin Newsom and made all this stuff happen. But the amount of damage you do to that state and probably all of the western states, because remember, California is a major import location to be able to bring, cargo into the West Coast. And if you were to say, well, you can't buy diesel in California anymore, I can't imagine what that would do. But I think they are going to cause the price of fuel in all of the western United States to go up. California already buys a lot of its gasoline out of refineries that I understand are near Reno, Nevada. And you can imagine what's going to happen to the West Coast cost of gasoline that's already way too high. Oregon is way too high. Washington is way too high. California is $1.56 a gallon on average higher than the rest of the country. And then they're going to say, oh, and we're going to wipe out the refineries as well. Do you know that they're actually bringing fuel in from Texas by way of the Bahamas? The fuel leaves Texas, and under the Jones Act, it can't be taken straight through the canal and to California. So they have to stop in the Bahamas to satisfy the Jones Act. And then that ship has to travel all the way through the Panama Canal and then up to California. They're going to put that state in a world of hurt because of bad decisions by people like Gavin Newsom. Thanks for the call, by the way. Let's go to Henry. Hey, Henry, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a retired merchant marine, and for a number of years, I was picking up Valdez crude oil from the North Slope, and I was depositing it all up and down the West Coast. We have unlimited oil resources right here on the West Coast. However, I never hear that being discussed in any conversations having to do with oil and petrol products, and I was wanting to know why not.
I think I can tell you, Henry. I mean, you worked in the business of delivering it. I went one time, was on a ship that had delivered oil from Valdez down to, I think it was Cherry Point in Washington State.
Yep.
There are a couple of refineries in Washington State. Let's start with that. That's a known fact. Then you've got no refineries at all in the state of Oregon, and California has now wiped out, I guess, all but one of its major refineries. So if you have all that oil, but you don't have any place to turn it into gasoline and diesel, what would you suggest we do with it?
Well, sir, in 1999, under the Clinton administration, we illegally sold our oil for $16 a barrel. And until.
Sold it to who, Henry? To Japan? Henry? I think Henry might have hit his mute switch. Henry, are you there? Well, what you got cut off, Henry? What's up?
Well, what I was saying is that I used to run tankers from Valdez up and down the coast. But you answered that one question. There are no more refineries.
Yeah.
So my point is moot.
Well, you know what I've suggested, Henry, for 30 years? The Indian tribes are not subject to the same regulations as the rest of the country. I wish they'd pick a deep water port like Coos Bay, Oregon, and say, we're going to build a big refinery there, and we're going to make gasoline and diesel and bring the oil here. I think that would
help. The Lars Larson Show. Larson Show.
President Trump is one fat-ass president. He secured the border at the level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Monday live on the Radio Northwest Network. And consider this. In both Oregon and Washington, although this particular issue involves Washington State specifically, both states have supported the craziest stuff. They have supported doctors who mutilate children in the name of a sexual perversity. They have supported all kinds of sexual perversions. And now state officials want to place sexually violent predators into residential neighborhoods near schools and parks. And the question is whether or not communities should be forced to accept that risk. It's a real pleasure to welcome back to the program Representative April Connors. She's a Republican member of the Washington State House of Reps. She represents part of the Tri-Cities area. Representative Connors, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me today, Lars. Appreciate it. We just stepped off the floor for a minute. We've got some big battles coming today. I think we have income tax coming to the floor here this afternoon. So.
Oh, my God. I certainly hope you're going to make the point that on the income tax, they've actually built a marriage penalty into this so-called millionaires tax.
Yes, they absolutely have. And, you know, frankly, if you make more than $1 million a year in Washington State, you should probably, if this goes through, you should probably get divorced. Just stay together. But there's definitely a marriage tax in there. So
what kind of evil bunch? I mean, I'm talking about your Democrat colleagues, and I don't know if you want to badmouth them or not, but I will. What kind of evil bunch says if two people each make, say, $650,000 a year, really good money, but say it's two doctors or two lawyers or a combination of the above, and individually they would not be taxed more, they would be completely exempt from the millionaire's tax, but if they're married, they're going to be paying taxes on, say, at $650 each, $300,000, and there's going to be a close to a $30,000 penalty for being married. I mean, are the Democrats really that anti-American and anti-marriage?
I do not know if they're anti-marriage or not, but it seems like just a crazy thing for me that they're doing that. There are a couple of amendments in the bill. There's about 80 amendments. They're all loaded up right now. There's one by, I think, Republicans that restores it, so you don't have the marriage penalty, and I do think there's a couple on the Democrat side as well. So we'll see if they take one.
But, when the state constitution says a tax has to be uniform, how is it uniform if a married couple pays $30,000 and an unmarried couple pays nothing, or even more than that?
Yeah, that'll be a great argument that you're probably going to hear here in a few hours. Where we've got, like I said, 80 amendments. At this point in time, it's going to be argued in the middle of the night, unfortunately, for the Washington taxpayers. So,
well, and when the tech industry is telling you put this thing off, I think they should do away with it altogether, but put it off till next year, or the year after that. They know, I think they suspect, that there are an awful lot of tech people who make very good money, and they're married to other people who make very good money, and they're all going to be subject to this if they're married, but not if they're not. And that this is going to be awfully tough to explain to their constituents at re-election time in a few months.
Yes, it will be. And we'll be, like I said, fighting on the House floor the whole thing this afternoon, but super concerned about that piece and many others. I think they should just put the entire bill down right now. As a matter of fact, we're going back to caucus in about 10 minutes to start briefing amendments.
Yeah, well, I put it to them because I want these Democrats to own this thing. Are there any Republicans that are going to cave in and vote for this thing?
Oh, gosh, no. I would be shocked in my caucus if anybody would even consider it at this point.
Very good. Well, let's talk about the perverts that they want to put in residential neighborhoods. How in the world is this happening, and why are all these state agencies willing to let it happen?
Well, it is basically what happened. I don't know if your listeners know, Lars, but these are the people that are on McNeil Island. These are the worst of the worst sex offenders. These are the ones that cannot be rehabilitated. And since they can't be rehabilitated, and there's basically court ordered that they have to be placed into less restrictive alternatives, they have decided to start taking, and the Civil Commitment Center, which is McNeil Island, was considered kind of the commitment center that they went to either serve out their sentence or stay there afterwards because they couldn't be put back into communities. Well, what's happening now is that those people, these sexually violent predators that are
call
on McNeil Island,
perverts,
are being put into communities. And the way Washington state law reads is every community gets their fair share of these predators, and they will put them into a less restrictive alternative house where you would, they buy a house in the neighborhood. The only restriction really that it has to be is it can't be within 500 feet of a school. They do have criteria that DOC looks at once they have someone going into the house, those criteria are, might have to have a fire fence, or it might have to have, their windows might have to have some type of screen where they can't see out on them. They have to have 24-hour security there. But still, these are being placed into, these are level 3 sex offenders that are not just level 3, they're considered sexually violent predators. So we had a house in Kennewick that was purchased by a gal who, this would be her fourth one that she owns. She owns 3 others in Western Washington. And so they're doing it as I shouldn't put assumptions on them, but they're doing it as a moneymaker. And they buy these houses, and then they have someone run the facility for them, and then they put the sexually violent predators in. So we had someone from Western Washington basically coming to Kennewick saying, we bought this house, we're going to put these violent predators in it, and this was a home that has 3 little girls next door to it. It backs a community swimming pool where the predators can look out at young kids. The neighborhood within a 2-mile radius had over 7,400 kids that go to school in it. And
the neighborhood has nothing to say about if this happens, do they?
Well, you would think they didn't, but I am so proud of our community. We've been working really hard here. We every year there's legislation run on sexually violent predators. This year, our group from Tri-Cities did over 8 bills. Of course, only one got a hearing in the Senate because I call it you have the Community Safety Committee. I actually call it the Criminal Safety Committee here because that's really all they care about in Olympia right now is criminal safety. We tried a series of bills here. Roger Goodman wouldn't hear them. But our community just really got a huge group effort together. They have been doing protests. They went over to the West Side. They protested in front of the people's home and business that bought this facility. They also had protested the person who was going to run it. And lo and behold, I'm proud to announce that our community this week put so much pressure on this house that the people that own the house have agreed to sell it.
Good. And let's make sure that re-election time.
This is what every community wants to see. Yeah.
No, every voter needs to know the pro-pervert class in the Democrat Party has to be unelected come November. That's Representative April Connors. She represents parts of the Tri-Cities. Back in a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show. With everything.
Disagree with Lars? Great. Naysayers go first at 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
And we want everyone here to stay in New York. You don't get to come from outside and then tell everyone else.
Now, you know what you just heard? Let me describe it because we've got the video and we'll post the video at LarsLarson.com. That was a man on a bullhorn outside the home of the mayor of New York, Zohran Mamdani, who's Muslim. And then there was a crowd of pro-Muslims. There were a group there who were saying, don't let New York City be taken over by the Muslims. They were pro-American, and they were against a Muslim takeover of New York City. Well, while they were there, that guy was on the bullhorn. And what you see in the video is somebody run up quickly behind him and then throw a bomb over the man's head. The man had just been saying, we want to make sure that everybody is welcome to come here to New York. Apparently, everybody includes Muslims, including those who toss IEDs. There are now two Muslim men who tried to blow up protesters at that protest outside of the Gracie Mansion, which is the mayor's mansion for New York City. So Mayor Mamdani comes out after the arrest of these two jokers. Do you know what they tossed? They tossed an improvised explosive device, a bomb, that included bolts and nuts and other kinds of shrapnel that, if that bomb had gone off, would have actually killed a lot of people. Well, thank goodness the bombs did not go off. But it gets worse than that. Inside that bomb, it was not, say, C4 or some other kind of explosive that many of us have heard of. It's an explosive known as TATP. Now, in the Muslim crowd, you know, the ones who are really good at making improvised explosive devices, TATP is a kind of explosive known as the Mother of Satan. And while there are some explosives that take a blasting cap to set them off, this TATP stuff, Mother of Satan, is stuff that is so volatile, you can actually set it off accidentally by just dropping it too hard. And thank God these bombs did not go off. And what's really bizarre is when you see the two guys who were arrested in this case, last names Balat and Kayumi. They are both Muslims. One is 18, one is 19, and they are now facing federal charges. Now, I'll tell you why that's important in a moment. But these two guys claim they didn't even know each other. Just one of them showed up at this protest and a counter protest and had some bombs, and the other guy agreed to help him with the bombs. So there's that. And then you get this. Let me tell you why it's important that they're facing federal charges. They're facing federal charges in part because we now have a Trump administration that controls the federal DOJ. So they can bring charges against these guys. Do you know what that prevents? it prevents somebody like, say, the Manhattan DA, Alvin Bragg, from putting some nuisance charges against these two young men and then giving them a sweetheart deal so they get off. They tried to kill people. One of them was screaming Allahu Akbar as he tossed the bomb. So Mayor Zohran Mamdani shows up and talks to reporters. And you know what he does? He blames white supremacy.
This was a vile protest rooted in white supremacy entitled Stop the Islamic Takeover of New York City. I'm the first Muslim mayor of our city. Anti-Muslim bigotry is nothing new to me, nor is it anything new for the 1 million or so Muslim New Yorkers who know this city as our home.
As our home. So you've got Mayor Mamdani. Does he come out and blame Muslims because it was two Muslims that tossed the bombs? It was one of them who shouted Allahu Akbar. No, he blames the people who are there protesting, saying we don't want a Muslim takeover of the city of New York City. Zohran Mamdani has ordered the New York Police Department to block one of the victims of that attempted bombing, Jake Lang, from even entering the press conference. Get that, not one of the perpetrators, but one of the victims or intended victims of that attempted bombing with an improvised explosive device. And then Mayor Mamdani talked about violence.
New York City will never tolerate violence, whether from protests or counter-protests. Many of the counter-protesters met this display of bigotry peacefully, with a vision of a city that is welcoming to all. But a few did not. Two men, Amir Balat and Ibrahim Kayumi, traveled from Pennsylvania and attempted to bring violence to New York City. They are suspected of coming here to commit an act of terrorism. There is video of these two individuals throwing two devices towards the protest. The police department has determined that these were improvised explosive devices made to injure, maim, or worse.
Or worse. Now, does he mention that the two attempted bombers were Muslims? He does not. Now, what do we need to see? Well, already the U.S. Attorney Jay Clayton has obtained indictments. This only happened yesterday outside Gracie Mansion in New York City. Two attempted Islamic bombers. And does the mayor say anything about that? No, he does not. Now, do the other New Yorkers who staged the protest saying, we don't want our city to be taken over by one particular religion, in this case, Islam? That is a perfectly acceptable kind of free speech because we've seen other cities in other parts of the world. We've even seen Dearborn, Michigan, that has effectively been taken over by Islam. Do you think that Islam is going to be friendly to other kinds of religions based on our experience on the rest of the world? I would say they are not. There are big cities like Paris where there are places the police don't even go to. And why? Well, because they are run by Muslim organizations. And the police say, we don't even go in there. They are so-called no-go zones. So what could you charge these two Islamic bombers with? You could charge them with use of a weapon of mass destruction. You could use transportation of explosive materials. You could charge them with interstate transportation because even according to Mayor Mamdani, they came all the way from their apparently upscale homes in Pennsylvania all the way to New York City to throw bombs at anybody who would stand up and say, don't allow a takeover of New York City. The fact is the Mamdani administration right now will not label this as an act of terrorism. That's it. They won't call the devices bombs. They call them incendiary devices packed with nuts and bolts. So imagine this. You build a bomb out of a notoriously unstable kind of explosive. You bring it down there, and literally in some of the videos of the incident that happened yesterday, you see police standing 20 or 30 feet away. And they're standing there as the two guys light the bombs on fire. And only then do the police go to try to tackle these guys. One of them managed to toss the bomb anyway. Thank God it did not go off. But if it had, these two actually told the police after they were taken into custody, we wanted this to be even more deadly than the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing. That's what we're up against. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
today.
All that water.
Missed the Lars Larson Show? Get the podcast right now at LarsLarson.com. Now, more with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get you your phone calls and emails. This segment of the show is brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialists at Oregon Medical Centers. I love naysayers, so let's start with Keith, who's waited the longest. Hey, Keith, what do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer?
Well, sir, I completely disagree with your view on medical marijuana or legal marijuana. I got to tell you, I'm a longtime user. I'm old enough to have smoked my granddad's pot, as you like to call it. I've had to quit several times during the years because of changes in employment and stuff. The whole addiction thing is nonsense. It's a habit-forming drug, but it's not addictive.
If that's the case, Keith, why is it that when I talk to people in the addiction business, you know, those people who treat people and try to get them off addictions, and they say the number two self-referral drug. So in other words, somebody walks in and says, I'm drinking too much. I'm a boozer. I'm addicted. That's the number one. Number two is pot. Why are all those people believing that they're addicted when you don't believe it?
I'm not saying it's not a habit. It's a very severe, strong habit. But there, it's not like I'm talking about an addiction where you have physical withdrawal, you get nauseated, you get...
No, it's not. I've never made the case that medical weed or any kind of weed was physically addicted. But if it addicts you, does it matter whether it's physical or just psychological?
Well, no, sir. But by the same token, do you enjoy food? I mean, you can eat just boiled grain every day and not change your food up. I mean, you do it because you enjoy it.
I could, but... In this case, I need food. If I don't eat food, I die. If I don't have weed, do I die? I guess I'm living proof that you don't.
Well, I guess you are, but by the same token, do you take medications? Any other medications for your health?
I do. I do one called metformin. Yep.
Okay.
For blood sugar.
Pressure and your diabetes.
No, blood sugar.
Right?
Yeah, blood sugar. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Well, I'm a cancer patient.
Those aren't addictive. Believe me, if I could quit them, I would. But they do improve my blood sugar. So there you go.
You have a habit of liking to be able to function and have a blood sugar that lets you stay.
No, I don't have a habit of liking to function. I know that my blood sugar will go up and it's not healthy for me. What medical condition are you treating with your medical weed?
I've been treating marijuana with it for 3 years.
No. What's the condition you're treating?
Cancer.
What kind of cancer do you have? Do you get nauseous without it?
I had kidney and bladder cancer, and I have metastatic melanoma at this time that's been treated.
So no, but what does the weed treat? Is it nausea? Is it something else?
I'm trying to explain that. Yes, sir. It was the nausea associated with it and the chronic pain from the mechanical injuries that I have.
And you know that medical marijuana is not a good analgesic, but I guess that probably doesn't matter if you like drinking. Do you like smoking weed? Keith, thanks for the call. Jeremy's also a naysayer. Jeremy, what do we disagree about?
Disagreeing about your views on medical marijuana, I completely disagree. I love you, Lars. I listen to you.
Thank you.
I want to be with you. I also want to preface this with, as soon as we all come to an agreement that there's no left and no right, and this is all theater, and we're all being played, we'll be in a better place.
Well, I agree with that as well. So far, you haven't said anything we disagree about.
Okay, so medical marijuana and marijuana in itself. I'm coming from an alcoholic state point of view. I don't necessarily agree that it is a habit-forming issue. I do know, and I've seen many people, and I've witnessed it, who have used medical marijuana to help get them off of heroin, fentanyl, methamphetamines. I've also seen people use it instead of alcohol. I'm not saying that one is better than the other, but quite honestly, I haven't seen a meth addict or an alcoholic that didn't smoke weed that didn't want to beat their wife. I mean, I just don't think that the level of that we're trying to take this to is in agreement.
What level? Jeremy, all I'm saying is I don't think weed treats much of anything, and I do know it's the number two addiction problem in America. So is that a reason to be concerned, especially when modern weed produces psychosis, and it dramatically increases the amount of psychosis in human beings. It also increases schizophrenia. So is it good to have a medicine that it doesn't really treat anything, does addict a lot of people, and does produce psychosis and schizophrenia? Does that sound like a good medical treatment?
Not necessarily, but we do the same thing in other aspects with other drugs. Take methadone, for example.
All you're doing is swapping heroin for methadone, so that's another addictive drug. But what problem do you solve by smoking weed?
I think at this point in time, I think that we're on the precipice of really finding out. With the deregulation that we have in play now allows the doors to be open for these different businesses or different medical facilities to really look at the value of what weed is. And until we get to the bottom
Words, you're telling me we don't know what it does, but maybe someday we'll find out something good it does do. And in the meantime, we'll have a lot of people who are addicted and a certain number who are psychotic or schizophrenic.
I'm not going to buy off on schizophrenia, but if we're going to go to a medical point of view, then maybe we should have a regulation where we're actually interviewing these people and see if they've got schizophrenia or mental disabilities, because there's a lot of other medications that are completely legal that would exacerbate a lot of those same things.
Jeremy, do you know any other medicine where the doctor says, you could use some of this, and you say, how much? I mean, with tetracycline, metformin, any of these other drugs, the doctor says take this much, this many times a day. With weed, it's smoke as much as you want, smoke it till you feel better, right? Have you ever heard of a drug that was actually a legitimate drug where the doctor said, take as much tetracycline as you like? You say, well, doc, don't they usually say so many milligrams per day for so many days? Yeah, just take as much as feels good.
Is there a drug out there like that? I'm sure there's probably a drug
I don't think you can name a single drug where if the doctor said, I think you should go home and take some, say you react to bee stings. And you say, okay, you're going to want to take some Benadryl. Should I take the whole bottle, doc? No, just take as much as feels better. I mean, it doesn't really make sense as a drug, and it does produce psychosis and schizophrenia. But Jeremy, good naysayer. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.